This is a replay for the Wednesday night, July 30th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. And I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 3 hours to spend together, and yeah, we certainly will celebrate Buddy Guy turning 89 and still touring. In fact, going to be in Arizona next week. And of course, tonight at Buddy Guy's in Chicago, the big birthday bash, and rightfully so. But it was Dave, I believe, on the north side who wanted to hear some Buddy Guy, and so we will. And a lot of birthdays today, actually. Paul Anka, 81. Yeah, how time is flying. Ed Cookie Burns, as in Cookie Cookie, lend me your comb, 90 years old today. Man, if that doesn't age you, nothing will. Yeah, Christine McGuire of the McGuire sisters, she's no longer with us, so that's the deal there. But Frank Stallone, 72. Yeah, if Christine McGuire was alive, by the way, she'd be 96. All right, so there you have. Oh, I can't forget Otis Taylor, 74. All right, so plenty of things to talk about, but 888-876-5593. We got Dennis in Colorado. Welcome back to WGN Radio. Hey, Dennis.
Well, you're making me feel old.
Oh, God. Well, Ed Cookie Burns being 90, there's something really wrong with that.
Well, I worked with Paul Anka back in, well, of course, I remember his songs when I was just a little kid, but... Yeah. I worked with him in the 80s, and he was old then.
You're right. Yeah, yeah, but old, anyway. Old but very rich. When you write the Tonight Show theme, you don't have to do anything else.
No, that's true. That's true. Anyway, I'm back in Colorado amongst the bears and the moose and the thunderstorms and so forth, and I had a great trip, like I talked about last week. I drove down to Arizona to see my dear friends Andy and Teresa, and I just couldn't take the heat, so I drove north to Flagstaff, but I'll get back to that in a minute. Last week you mentioned a car that I think is the most beautiful car ever designed, and when you brought it up I spaced it and didn't think about it, but that Oldsmobile Tornado,
yeah, that's 66, yeah,
66 63,
well, 66 and, I think was the debut year.
Was it? Could be.
Yeah, I think so.
It didn't have fins on it, but it had that beautiful chrome bumper that kind of stuck out from the side.
Well, and it had the disappearing headlights, which you had to love that.
Disappearing headlights, front-wheel drive. It started out as a concept car, but ended up being produced. And there was one person in my neighborhood that had one, and boy, was I jealous.
Oh, yeah. And it was the Motor Trend car of the year. It was a perfect car.
It was. And it looked real comfortable. Once you got inside, it looked real comfortable.
And it had a 425 cubic inch engine.
That's right. That's right. 425. Yeah. They jumped up from their typical Olds 394, which in itself was quite a powerful engine. But boy, when you talk about chrome and fins, give me a 69 Cadillac.
Oh, of course, of course. Best chrome in the world. Looks like it's going to attack the car behind it. It's just wonderful, everything about it. And, yeah, when you got the electric windows, I mean, they meant business. They went up in a nanosecond.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And later cars, they slowed it down a little bit. People even complained about it.
Which is terrible.
I'd rather have a slow window.
I like the fact that it would damn near kill you if you weren't watching out.
You like that, huh?
Yes.
Anyway, I've always liked Flagstaff, and I went up there, and it was the weather, of course, was beautiful. But those gigantic cantilever towers advertising hotels. there's one that's called that advertises rooms for $5 a night. It's not a hotel anymore, but the Downtowner, it dominates the skyline.
Yeah.
But it's a nice hotel, but it was anyway. I got away from the heat, and I spent some time up there, and I did some tours. That town is, besides being very rich in history, is full of hauntings. All of the hotels have haunting stories. Some of the staff talked about hauntings. John Wayne stayed at the Monte Vista and had an encounter, which he very aptly described to the crew. So it is, and most ghosts were friendly. Nobody was ever intimidated by them. There was one, I'm told, that killed 12 people. And
while they were staying at the hotel? Hopefully they weren't just tourists, you know.
Yeah, I know. Well, I did later stay at a haunting hotel, which I'll tell you about in a minute. But the I stayed at the residence in there. So
my favorite there is Little America.
Oh, Little America.
Yeah.
They have one of those in Salt Lake.
Of course they do. Well, that's originally, and of course in Wyoming and where they're originally from and all that. But yes, of course. But the one in Flagstaff is particularly nice. I wonder if it's haunted.
I don't know, but I'll tell you what, there was a lot of haunting stories. And there was the Monte Vista, which is quite prominent, big sign, a lot of history, built by Zane Grey, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that John Wayne stayed at. And there's also a little bit of radio history to that hotel. The second woman ever to be granted an FCC license was granted a license in Flagstaff. She had a 25-watt radio transmitter from the basement of a theater company that she ran there in Flagstaff. And then she moved the radio station to the Monte Vista, raised it to 400 watts. I'm sorry, 100 watts, and the entire town showed up to give her a welcome.
Yeah, that's KFXY. Mary Costigan was her name.
Mary Costigan, that's
yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And when it was at the Hotel Monte Vista, when they did get their final 100 watts initially after the 25, they were broadcasting a big 3 hours a day from the hotel. So.
I know. 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
But I bet the whole town was tuned in during that 3 hours.
Undoubtedly, yeah. All 17 people. No, it's a little more than that, but yeah. So, absolutely, and that's neat. Yeah, the Monte Vista had all sorts of interesting stories, but I didn't know about the hauntings.
Yeah, a lot of haunting stories, and none of them bad, except for that one guy that killed a bunch of people, and he was a bad spirit, but everybody else reported very... I wonder what Marianne would say about it. She would obviously know about it if it had history there.
Yeah, but I'd love to talk to Marianne. I haven't talked to her in quite a while. She's sort of backed away from appearances, and I feel really sad about that because I'd love to talk to her.
Yeah, I know. And then I moved on east to Gallup, New Mexico.
Oh.
And you could probably guess which hotel I stayed at there.
I don't even want to.
But the El Rancho, the famous
okay.
El Rancho.
Okay, all right.
That's where all the movie stars stayed during all of the Westerns that were filmed in that area.
Yeah, right on Route 66. Now, it used to be historic, but this goes way back. What is it like today?
Today, it's beautiful.
Really?
And I tell you what, it's been I think I was 17 years old, the last time I ever got into a manually operated elevator where you had to pull the steel gates across.
Yeah, right.
And then pull the big door across. Well, the Monte Vista still has one, and it's still in use, and you can still use it. And a big player piano in the lobby, very beautifully decorated, reasonable rates. I felt nice and safe there. Very excellent decor, good food, and regular keys for the hotel rooms. None of this
right, of course.
Card junk.
Well, I'm delighted that that the Hotel El Rancho has kept its charm, and I guess obviously is remodeled, because that is certainly not not new. And so that's a delight. I had no idea.
Yeah, they added some on, I think, probably 20, 30 years ago.
Okay.
They added a portion onto it. But I stayed on the third floor of the old one. I was expecting a haunting, but I didn't get one. I guess Virginia Mayo didn't have much interest in that.
Yeah.
But I stayed, allegedly, in a room that she stayed in when she was there to film a movie, Westward, Fort Dobbs or something like that. But very nicely appointed, and it has modern stuff like, I mean, there's just enough modern stuff. Like, you've got USB ports for your phones,
okay.
A standard telephone that looks something like the phone that was in production just before the 2500.
Okay.
And, you know, so it's got a phone in the room. But it was... it was an excellent excellent facility, and that nice little Crosley radio replica played the KYBA oldies quite nicely.
Oh, wow, all right. All right, yeah, because I know that was D.W. Griffin's brother or something who built that, and we're going back to the 30s. And the last time I knew, it had been closed, and so I guess somebody has reopened it and redone it.
Yeah, and done a beautiful job with it.
Well,
and,
good.
But I guess there were about 40 Westerns that were filmed in the area.
Yeah.
And the list of movie stars and stuff that have stayed there were extensive. Photos on the wall.
Oh, sure.
Pictures.
Sure.
All that stuff.
Yeah, there were like 100
a
Westerns. New Mexico has always been great to the film industry. And to this day, a lot of TV's done there and all that. Lots of benefits to a film in New Mexico.
Oh, okay. Friendly tax environment.
Yes, yes. They do a lot for you, more than most states.
Yeah. Yeah, most people are going to Canada now. For
well, right, but. And I understand that, too. Okay, so I just looked up the hotel, because, like I say, last I knew it was closed, and apparently it was bought in 1986, all right, and it reopened in 1988. How about that? So it's been open all a while. Hell, I had no idea. I just remember that they had closed it. I figured, well, that's it. Charm of yesterday, convenience of tomorrow. Yeah.
Yes, and if you're anywhere near there and need a place to stay, it's a very worthwhile stay.
Yeah, that's good.
If not for anything but the elevator.
All right. All right. Well, that's neat. Good to know.
In the main one.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope you're well. I hope John's well.
Well, I'm glad you had a good trip. That's wonderful. And next time I will absolutely look at the Hotel El Rancho.
Yeah. Yeah, if you get up to Flagstaff,
I try not
look
to.
Look around.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You have lots of time.
Yeah. All right.
I guess you made the trip all the way back. To fix whatever problem you had. That's a lot of driving.
Oh, yeah, well, that got through that, and sending out the errant piece of equipment tomorrow for repair. So we'll see how that goes.
So you identified it.
Oh, yeah, I know. We found the culprit, all right. And it was as suspected. So in the meantime, I'll just drag the spare wherever I go.
Excellent.
All right, good deal. Okay. Well, thanks, Dennis. Glad you're back
evening,
in Colorado. All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
All right.
So 888-876-5593, 888-88-RALEIGH. So, yes, the El Rancho. And I can't believe I've driven through Gallup a lot of times since it's been reopened, and I never even bothered to look. And, yeah, you're talking about Route 66, of course, which only exists in small pieces because mostly it's, you know, like I-40 or whatever. But most towns in the West that it went through, they have a downtown that'll be the historic Route 66. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888-RALEIGH. So since we're talking about historic and all those wonderful kind of things, time to talk about radio. and the Sea Crane Company. Yeah, I'll tell you what. I love that CC Radio 2E. It's the radio I keep by my bedside. Why? Well, because like everything Bob Crane developed, it has just great reception. And I mean, probably the greatest of any in the line. It's, of course, got the twin coil ferrite in it, so you know you're going to get terrific AM reception, but great FM reception, too. And I always say that the best litmus test is take your average radio, tune to a weak station, particularly a weak AM station, then use the CC Radio 2E, and it'll blow it out of the water. So it'll just sell itself. But it's got all the bells and whistles you'd want as well, and it sounds really good. The sound on it is just terrific, and you can adjust it to whatever you want. And whether you're listening to music or you're listening to talk, it will absolutely perform. It's got the weather band and a weather alert, so especially now that we're talking about emergency radios more often, you will always know what's going on from NOAA with that. It's got a clock and a lighted dial light, which is nice, and a timer and an alarm, and some presets, which I like as well. And you can fine-tune as well as skip through the band kind of quickly. So it is truly a great radio, and you can take a look at it at ccradio.com. ccradio.com, the CC Radio 2E, my bedside companion. If you can't go online, you can give them a call. They'll answer all your questions. They'll send you a catalog in the mail if you wanted to. And that's 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. So if you're looking for a high-quality radio that just is a workhorse that will be your bedside companion forever, take a look at that CC Radio 2E. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio. Buddy Guy, and that was originally recorded in July 1991, and that was on Silvertone, but the version I played was actually from, I think, 1999. It was the Guitar Center Sessions that was on DirecTV, and a real nice version of it there, so wanted to pick that. And we'll have some more Buddy Guy for sure. Happy birthday, born today in 1936. And this is one that, man, Leonard Chess just misjudged him all the way around. Now, he signed him, and so that's good. Originally, Buddy was from Louisiana, a place called Lettsworth. And by the time he was 20 or so, he was in Baton Rouge. And he actually wound up getting a contract with Ace, and they didn't release anything. And so he moved to Chicago, and I think that was about 1957, and immediately fell under the spell of Muddy Waters. And, in fact, a competition with Magic Sam and Otis Rush, a West Side Guitars competition, wound up giving Buddy Guy a contract. Now, it wasn't at that point, it was not Chess, it was Cobra. And in those sessions, he wound up working with Ike Turner. And it was interesting on that. And he was ultimately, after a few releases, signed to Chess. And that's where we'll pick it up next. Like I say, Leonard Chess really, really missed the boat on this, I think. But it worked out well in the end. All right, whatever's on your mind will be on mine, too. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Darling, you must be stone crazy. Either you're going to lose your mind.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, 1961 on Chess. Yeah, Stone Crazy, Buddy Guy. And interestingly, I think Rolling Stone has like the 500 greatest songs of all time or something like that. And it came in the 80s. It actually is on the list. Yeah, like I say, Leonard Chess didn't get it. In fact, he denounced Guy, even though he was on the label, as just makes noise. All right, so they tried him as a solo artist, and you just heard it, which I thought was pretty good, but nonetheless, it did nothing. But for that reason, Leonard Chess didn't really care if Buddy Guy played on other people's stuff. And so it was on the Delmark label in 1965 on Hoodoo Man by Junior Wells. Guy was playing, and he was under contract to Chess. And like I say, Chess didn't care that he played, but they drew the line at him using his name. And so if you take a look at that album, you'll find that Buddy Guy becomes Friendly Chap. Yeah, that's how he got the credit on there, Friendly Chap. But it is interesting, of course, because revered in so many circles. But of course, when it comes to commercial radio airplay, pretty much forget about it. And he talked about that from time to time. And he said, "Yeah, the purpose of me trying to play that kind of rocky stuff is to get the airplay. I'm searching, hoping, well, if I'll hit the right notes, say the right things, maybe they'll put me on one of those big stations. Yeah, like if you get Eric Clapton to play a Muddy Waters song, they call it classic. They put it on the station." But you'll never hear Muddy Waters. Yeah, ain't it the truth? And so, he had a flirting relationship with that, but ultimately did so well on his own. And, of course, Guitar Center's Hollywood Rock Walk, as well as should be, 8 Grammy Awards and so much more, including a Lifetime Achievement Award. And, like I say, 89 today, celebrating tonight at his Club Legends in Chicago, and on tour. He'll be in Arizona next week. So, happy birthday to Buddy Guy. And that was Dave in Northside suggested we play a couple of those, and happy to do it. So, 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. Naoto is in Japan. All right, Naoto, thanks for checking in.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about Enneagram.
Interesting. Ideogram, of course, originally the word would refer to chromosomes, but I assume you're talking about the AI program that takes text and turns it into graphics?
Sorry for my pronunciation. I mean Enneagram.
Here I thought we were talking about ideograms. Because it says on the screen, ideograms, and I thought, well, you were interested in computers. It's actually a kind of a freeware program where literally it will take text and turn it into graphics, so you might check it sometime. But let's get to enneagrams, more fun.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think one of the... probably, I think this is like an official one, online.
Yeah, there's nine types that they have.
Yeah.
And so you took the test, and you're a seven mm-hmm. or a nine or
yeah,
what?
Seven.
Yeah, seven. Okay.
Yeah, I'm a seven, but I took another one, and the result was four, type four.
Yeah. All right. Well,
four
is the individualist, expressive, dramatic, self-absorbed, and temperamental. Seven is the enthusiast, spontaneous, versatile, distractible, and scattered. Yeah, that sounds like all of us. So I don't know. Well, on mine, I'm the eight. I love the fact confrontational. Oh, that's just what I want to be, confrontational. Yeah. So
I saw that description too.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess all of them are positive and negative, but it's interesting. So you took the test, you came out a seven, and you think you're more of a four?
I'm not quite sure. You mentioned before, like I doubt like how self perceptive I am. Maybe like four.
Okay. But I still think if you took this test, say, every 6 months when you were in a different mood when you were reading the questions, you'd probably come out with mm-hmm. different types every time. I don't think we're all that...
Yeah.
We're not all that great at self-analysis. Maybe the test should be mm-hmm. that you get your best friend to take it about you, what they say about you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that might work out a little better.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, enneagrams have been around for a while. So now I don't know of any agencies or employment or companies that use the Enneagram like they do Myers-Briggs, but mm-hmm. maybe they do.
Yeah, so I'm not really into Enneagram, so I will dig deep on this and maybe talk a little bit more about this future.
Yeah. Well, I love, it's not that old, you know, it came around like in the last 50, 60 years, but when they developed it, the guys who developed it says it has ancient roots, right? Goes back to Sufism mm-hmm. and even earlier with links mm-hmm. to Greece and Babylon. And I don't know. I think it's pretty good. I don't know anybody who knows much about Sufism. So how could you contradict it? But you've got all sorts of people. They mentioned pretty much everybody. Mystic spiritual teachers whose names you can't pronounce. Bolivian philosophers. You know, who knows? So I don't know.
Yeah. Looks interesting. So.
And you know, in the 90s, so about 30, 35 years ago now, they put out a bunch of books about it, the Enneagram, and I think that's probably when it started to get a lot of traction, because of course you put out a book at a big publishing company and you got a publicist who's hyping your book. I think when I was packing stuff, I actually found a few of these Enneagram books, so when I unpack, I will grab them and we can compare. But from what I can tell, the origins, to say the least, are quote-unquote disputed, I guess.
So that's pretty historical.
Yeah. So, but I'd be curious if anybody anywhere is using it to assess people in any way. See, that I haven't heard about
yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So now it's a day later. I assume that Japan is no worse for the wear from the tsunamis.
Yeah, I think around my area, the maximum height was around about 96 centimeters.
Okay. All right.
So, not that severe.
Right, exactly. So, interesting, but no big event.
Yeah.
All right.
I think, so it's nice to be careful, but not to, you know, excessively so.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I got to say, I'm not sure I would have heeded the evacuation warnings, but, you know, a lot of people did, and probably better safe than sorry. But from everywhere I can tell, I don't think anybody sustained a lot of damage. I know they're having some kind of a watch saying, well, you might get more later. I'm not too concerned about that. But, you know. Yeah. All right. Well, good to hear from you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, bye. All right. Yeah. So always good to hear from Naoto. So, yeah, the Enneagram. I think it was the books, and there were a couple of them, you know, understanding the Enneagram. And, you know, it's interesting. You look it up online, and they'll say, there's biblical ramification. No, there isn't. All right. It's a couple of guys who came on to something pretty good. The Catholic Church says it's incompatible with Catholicism. Gee, that's a shock, right? All right. So much for the holy origin. All right. But yeah, you know, it'll sell books. Why not? 888-876-5593-8888-ROLLYE. But I got to look that up and find out why. Was it just the books that suddenly it became very popular? And, you know, are we into that much self-awareness? I don't know. I think the ideogram looks really interesting. And not that actually, like I say, is normally for, you know, chromosomes and genetic typing and all that. But apparently they're using it as the name for an AI program that converts text to graphics. I might want to try that. Yeah, not that I'm sure I could see it, but just in case. All right, so if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. We got your requests as well and more coming up. And otherwise, I'll find something else to talk about. Yeah, but if it's on your mind, I'd rather talk about that coming up on WGN Radio.
I smoke them boo, I smoke them boo. I went to Chinatown way back in old Hong Kong to get some egg foo young. And then I heard a gong. Ling ting tong, got to sing that song. I smoke them boo, I smoke them boo. Ling ting tong, he would never be wrong.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and Jan in Dallas said, play Ling Ting Tong. So we've got to play the original from 1954, The Five Keys on Capitol, of course. Yeah, but it's interesting who recorded this. And it's not like hundreds of people or anything like that. There's like a dozen versions. It was written by Mabel Godwin. And she was interesting. She was actually, she moved to New York and performed a lot, like at the Apollo and things like that. But anyway, I don't know what possessed her to write it, but the Blue Jays covered it. And that, okay, I can almost see it. Hawkshaw Hawkins? All right, so, yeah, I'll have to find his version. I can't imagine. I smoke 'em, boo, die, eh. Okay, the Charms did it. That fits as well. But Buddy Knox? Okay. And that was in 1961. Then Bill Haley. Well, this was long after their heyday, to say the least. Yes, Bill Haley and the Comets did it in September of 1968. Just saying that sounds painful. I think Snooks Eaglin was the last guy to do it. But there were others, you know, like Buddy Morrow, you know, his orchestra or whatever. But yeah, those were the big ones. And I have absolutely no idea what Mabel had in mind, other, of course, than writing a hit record. And that's probably good enough, don't you think? Exactly. And it did well. So there you have it. All right. So 888 876-5593-8888, Raleigh. I was just reading this story. Now, what happened to it? Yeah, I was in the middle of reading it during the last commercial respite, and then it just disappeared. But, gee, what a shock that is. So let me get this back, because this was just weird. Or maybe not. Maybe it's just desperate. I'm not 100% sure. But a lot of people decide they want a change in their life, and that was the case with a guy from Texas, Derek Huffman. Derek Huffman and his wife, Deanna, and their three children moved to Russia this year. They were looking for traditional values. I don't know why they thought they'd find it, you know, in Kyiv, but all right. And so apparently Derek was going there hoping for a job with the Russian military as a welder. But this man had absolutely no prior military experience whatsoever, and for all I know, knew nothing about welding either, I'm not sure, because after a few weeks of training, he's sent to the front lines in the Ukraine. And now, on top of everything else, they don't speak or understand a word of Russian. Not the wife, not the kids, not Derek. And Derek, who is on the front lines now, says, "I've earned our place here. Now we're just believing in God that everything is going to work out as it's supposed to." Well, all right. Derek had to donate 10,000 rubles for his own supplies. He hasn't received any pay or bonus since he's been in the service. Yeah, exactly what values would that be? What would possess you to do that? All right, so 888-876-5593. Let's talk about something considerably nicer, and that would be Little Willie John. All right, Johnny in Austin, welcome back to WGN Radio.
And how are you?
Well, better than this guy in Russia, that's for darn sure.
I just joined the show a little late, so I had a bunch of stuff going on, so I missed a bit. Oh. I heard more last night, but I missed a bit tonight, but...
No, it's a guy who...
I assume all is...
It was a Texan who decided he wanted a change in life, so he takes his wife and kids and moves to Kyiv. He wants Russian values. Doesn't speak a word of Russian, wants to be a welder with the military. I don't know if he knows anything about welding. He knew nothing about military. They put him on the front lines in the Ukraine. He hasn't gotten a dime yet. Yeah, right, exactly. So, yeah, be careful what you wish for. I don't know what values he was looking for, but there you have it. All right, on to happier things.
I got a couple of questions here, and then I got a request for a song.
All right.
Nat King Cole's version of "Sin for Me."
Uh-huh.
My question is: You're a great collector of the original 45s. Sadly, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got that on a CD, and as I hear that, and maybe it's just my mind, but it seems to me like when I had that on a 45, "Sin for Me" by Nat Cole,
mm-hmm.
it was a lot faster than what I get on the CD. Am I just thinking that, or do you?
I haven't heard the CD. It was a 45 and 57, and in fact, it was that Scranton pressing plant where it was pressed. And so I think what we have to do is play the 45 and compare it. And I can probably do that. Maybe not this second, but I absolutely can do it because I've got it. Very often that's the case. You know, I'm such a non-fan of CDs. The only CDs I like are the bootlegs, because basically...
And, you know, you were so true. I've heard you say this about Motown before.
Oh, soulectomy. Just a soulectomy. It was terrible.
They had so many... I mean, they just had some bad engineering there. I mean, I don't have to tell you that. But this goes back to a statement that you made before, that they should have... That you should have saved all your Motown single hits on 45s,
right,
because they're not the same. Well, after all these years, I've gotten conditioned to the CDs and the album version.
No.
I'm not talking about the Jimmy Max. That's obvious.
Right. Well, no. You got right, exactly. That's terrible. The 45s are the way to go. My God.
Well, I was listening to the old Air Check of me on KYOK. And that's where I noticed the difference. I think it was on "Since I Lost My Baby," maybe.
Okay, right.
And I'm like, oh, my goodness. And I don't know what kind of condition my singles are in. I don't even have a turntable working to play them.
Oh.
So, yeah. Oh. But anyway, but here's another thing.
Here, now, before we do anything I pulled the original 45 version of "Send for Me." All right. Directly.
Before you do that, do you have a break or spots coming up or anything?
I think in about 3.5 minutes, so we're good.
Okay, I'm watching out.
Well, thank you. You see, because you're a professional disc jockey. Me, I don't know how to tell time. All right, so
don't disfigure me like that. Call me disc jockey.
Well, I would
Rudy Poots.
No, be proud about that, for God's sakes. All right, so here's
I'm imitating Shelley Pope.
Yeah, no, I know. I love Shelley Pope. All right, and that's exactly what he said too. So, send for me. Here's the 45.
When you want a true lover, send for me, send for me. You never want any other, send for me, send for me. I promise you I'll be true, send for me, send for me.
So is that the one you have on CD?
I can't remember. I mean, I'd have to hear him. I'll have to go hear my CD. I don't know.
Okay.
But it was a great song. I mean, I love it.
Oh, absolutely.
But I just wondered if it was any different. But I do have a couple of things I would like to talk about Little Willie John.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Should I start that discussion?
Firstly, do you have a favorite Little Willie John?
Well, I do, and I just... It was a long time ago. I heard it, and I kind of try to make a point about it. But it's kind of amazing what he did to this old song that came out in the 30s. Bing Crosby and Ray Noble had it out in about 1934.
Cottage for
Vaughn
Sale.
Vaughn Monroe had it in 44, and then Nat Cole did a beautiful version of it. And I don't know, because I don't think it was a single by Nat Cole, but I discovered it a long time ago. It's kind of a rarity by Little Willie John.
You're talking about A Cottage for Sale, isn't it?
No.
No.
It's called The Very Thought of You.
Oh, of course.
Really,
that's a wonderful record. I mean,
it's a beautiful song.
Absolutely.
And I wanted, and then I'd like to hear a little history of Little Willie John, because I think he died in prison.
Absolutely. It's a story, and we'll tell it. And of course, his sister recorded as well, Mabel John. I don't know if you're aware of her.
I didn't know it for a long time that they were relation at all.
Have you heard any of her stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
she was in Stax, wasn't she?
Yeah. All right. So good deal. All right. And absolutely a relationship. We'll talk about that. And, The Very Thought of You. Hell, a record that even Ricky Nelson couldn't ruin. All right. So don't go away. Stay where you are. And, Johnny, and we'll, on Sunday night, 6 to midnight, you doing anything? Well, we'll tell you exactly what you should be doing coming up on WGN Radio.
The very thought of you.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, there's over 770 versions of that song. Al Boley had the first one, but not the first hit. That was in April of 34. In May of 34, Ray Noble and his orchestra had the hit. And then it went from there. Everybody and their brother did this song. And Johnny from Austin wants to talk Little Willie John. So yeah, is that your favorite Little Willie John?
You know, it blew me away. When I found that, it was an accident, and I Nat Coles is beautiful. And actually, I went back and listened to the ones from the 30s and 40s, and I like that kind of music, but didn't come near the way Willie John touched me with the way he did it. His voice was just... he did it well. And then the musical part of it was very nice, too. So, yeah. And I don't care for Fever by him and all that other stuff. But there is another great Little Willie John, too, and probably more, but this one was called Inside Information, mm-hmm. I think, from 63.
Okay.
Yeah. I just don't think he ever really got what he deserved. He had a lot of talent.
Absolutely had a lot of talent. He was his own worst enemy. Start to finish. Oh, my dear God. He could have kept a team of psychiatrists busy as far as that goes. My favorite is either Heartbreak, It's Hurting Me, or I'm Shaking. But anyway, that be the case. He was an interesting guy. He was little. In fact, the guy who discovered him more than anything, I mean, Johnny Otis had seen him in talent contests but didn't get a chance to do much with him, and Henry Glover. That's the connection right there. Now, Henry Glover did A&R for King, and then later A&R for all the labels that Moish Levy got from George Goldner, you know, through the gambling debts, like the G and Ramas and all that. But anyway, Henry signs him to King in 1955 and calls him Little Willie because he's short. That time he was only 18 years old, as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. And first thing he did was he redid Titus Turner's All Around the World, which, you know, grits, ink, roses,
eggs,
ink, poetry.
Oh, yeah, I did like that one.
Yeah, it's like Mona Lisa was a man. And, so many other wonderful things as far as that goes. And he was doing a lot of shows. In fact, James Brown, about this point in time, was opening for him. And, of course, that makes sense because James Brown was also on King. So you can see the connection there.
When I discovered James Brown, he was doing Prisoner of Love and some of these old standards.
Oh, yeah. Too. No, he did a number of them that never got much airplay. Willie John was performing with you know, basically all the big names for quite a while, and he got into later the civil rights fight. But okay, that's great, and entertainers would say, oh, he's impish and he's, you know, he's very generous and he's just got a great personality. Well, he also had an incredibly short temper, and he drank, and he was arrested repeatedly. For everything from narcotics to grand larceny, all right? And so finally, Sid Nathan had enough and dropped him in 1963.
How old would he have been, roughly, do you know?
I do know, because I know exactly when he was born. He was born in 37. So in 55, he was 18. So in 63, he's in his 20s, you know, mid-20s. Basically that was the deal, but it was just an accident waiting to happen. So here he is, this King dumps him, and, you know, it's not looking good for him, and he is in Seattle in 1965 in a bar. Actually, 64 is when the event happened. 65 was when he was convicted. He stabs Kendall Roundtree to death. And he's convicted of manslaughter, and so he's sent to Walla Walla, you know, Washington State Penitentiary. And he appealed the conviction. The case was being reconsidered, and he did a comeback album while this was going on, which was not released until like 10 years ago or so, around that time. But the deal was that he was back at Washington State Penitentiary in 1968. And a lot of people talked about what he died of. I had always heard it was pneumonia, but the death certificate says it's a heart attack. And he's buried in near Detroit. So that was the deal. So he was 30 years old, basically. You know, not basically, he was 30 years old. And he had a wife and a couple of kids. And, of course, Mabel was one of his sisters. He had two other sisters and five brothers. And, It was a thing, like I say, where he was so much his own worst enemy. And James Brown actually recorded a tribute album for him. You might have heard it, Thinking About Little Willie.
No, I didn't know.
It's called Thinking About Little Willie John and a Few Nice Things. So, no.
What was on that? You recall what was on that album?
Yeah, I've got it here somewhere. Talk to Me, Suffering with the Blues, Cottage for Sale, Heartbreak, It's Hurting Me, A Note or Two, Fat Eddie. There's more on it, but those ones that come to mind. Home at Last, which Rudy Toombs wrote. But anyway, so there was a lot on that album. But anyhow, that was the deal there. And so you have a lot of people who look at him as an inspiration, to say the least. But, you know, this is, I know there was a book about a fast life and a mysterious death. I don't really think the death was that mysterious. You know, I don't think like he was killed in prison or anything like that. I think he just died. And 30 years old, and that was the deal. But yeah, I think if he wasn't drinking, and if he could have controlled his temper, he probably would have had more of a career. But even that notwithstanding, he had a lot of great records in the 50s and early 60s.
Well, in a short amount of time, from what I researched myself, he did have a lot of releases. The sad part about it, a lot of them never even charted.
Well, right. But, you know, that again, that's Sid Nathan, that's King. They'll release any... Remember, Sid Nathan pressed his own singles. He had the plant right there in Norwood. So didn't cost him anything specifically to put out a voluminous amount of product.
So did he have a good promotion team?
I don't think it's that at all, really. You know, you got several things going on with regard to that, and he did have hits, but you know, why? And some of them, I mean, Talk to Me, I thought was a great record.
Oh gosh, it was great.
Yeah, so you know, I mean, he had hits, but when you're an independent label, you're victimized by distribution. And we've talked a lot about this, I'm sure, over the years. I mean, that's why everybody was falling all over themselves to pay Dick Clark, because if you could get on American Bandstand, of course, you'd have the hit simultaneously. But if you didn't, you're at the mercy of these independent distributors, and you wind up with rolling hits. You're on the chart a lot longer, but you never have enough points to be very high on it. And so that's just, you know, part and parcel of being an independent label. So I think there's a lot of things that went into why. And of course...
Go ahead,
I was going to say, then you talk about some of the material, though. When you're talking about The Very Thought of You or A Cottage for Sale, you think about what was being played at that point in time, and there really wasn't a home for it. You know, the MOR stations weren't going to, and the top 40 stations weren't looking for that sound.
No, I know, but with that, you know, and some, for example, I don't know if it's a good analogy, but Little Johnny Taylor put out a good version of Big Blue Diamonds.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a wonderful song. And hell, there was a big country hit as well.
And then who was it? Oh, gosh. I'm thinking Rufus Thomas, but it's not. The other Johnny Taylor, the Johnnie Taylor.
Right, absolutely.
He put out For Sentimental Reasons on an RCA album.
Right. Yeah.
So some of these R&B artists did some of that stuff.
Most of them did some of that, but it didn't necessarily see the light of day. I'll tell you the one that is interesting to find out that he did pop standards, the guy who never performed sober, a Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
I never knew much about him.
Okay, he's crazed, absolutely crazed. But he did pop standards. You know, and country.
Give me my boots and saddle.
You know, just, yeah. So,
no.
Oh, yeah.
He escaped me. I don't know. And, I know who he is.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Well, it was just the one record, you know, but, and it was basically a gimmick, but, you know, I put a spell on you.
I know that one.
Yeah, right. That's the one everybody knows. That's the one where, and I've told this story before, he used to perform, and on stage he'd come out of a coffin, you know, with a hole.
Yes.
Right. Except he was booked in Baltimore, and the promoter there didn't know the difference and got him a casket. He went nuts. Screaming Jay Hawkins, don't come out of no casket, you know.
Don't be demeaning me like that.
Oh, yeah. And then the other time was when he thought that the Drifters were out to kill him. And this, you know, the deal was he'd come out of this casket. Well, there was something that kept the lid from closing, you know, like a pen or something that he kept there. Well, the Drifters were on stage, and I think it might have been Benny King, actually, because it was the second group of Drifters, you know, when they made them tour for a year before George Treadwell actually started releasing them. And mm-hmm. anyway, they locked Screamin' Jay Hawkins in his casket. And so he goes completely berserk, and the casket starts to rock on stage. He's trying to get out. People think it's an act. Eventually, it topples off the stand and opens, and he crawls out of it. He refused to play with the Drifters for the rest of the tour.
So, oh, yeah. My gosh. Yeah. I've never heard that story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so there's oh, a, but yeah, wow. Big Blue Diamond was done by everybody and their brother. A country version I liked from 72 was Jackie Ward. But
he was a disc jockey on Keener Radio in Houston.
Jackie Ward. I was going to
yeah.
say, don't tell me Screamin' Jay Hawkins. Yeah, well, Jackie Ward,
no.
I'd believe that. And I thought it was pretty good.
It was good, but he was a DJ on Keener Radio, 1070.
Yeah, right, a fine daytimer.
Yeah, we all, yeah, but I'll tell you what, I was with the original staff when they came on the air in 1968.
Oh, I'm not surprised. They were a great little radio station, I'm telling
you.
Well,
they weren't until they went full-time in about 72.
Yeah.
And it was taken over, the program was taken over by a guy named Rick Libby, who came from KPHT.
Right. Yeah, right, exactly.
And he knew his stuff.
But before I remember Rick Libby was there. Somebody else was there. Who was their music director? There was somebody.
Bruce Nelson.
Yes, Bruce Nelson. Yes, I promoted many records to Bruce Nelson. Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And, that was that station, though. When it came on the air as a daytimer, it was not very impressive.
Well, yeah, but it didn't.
But they had Jackie Ward come through there. They had a guy named Eddie Kilroy who was on Sirius XM for a while.
Right.
He might still be. I don't
know. Right, and he did a lot of country music production, actually. I think his name was Dave Moore. But
really?
Yeah, I think so. But I could be wrong, but he was he became Eddie Kilroy, and then he wound up, I mean, for a while he was doing rodeos and stuff like that, and then I think it was Chet Atkins who was his benefactor as far as getting him to, you know, to Nashville. So
Big Blue Diamond, I think that in the Golden Triangle of Texas, Beaumont, Port Arthur, and Orange, and part of Louisiana. Isn't there a guy named Clint West or something that did that originally?
Oh, Big Blue Diamond.
Everybody.
This is another one of those things that you know, probably 300 versions.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, Clint West. That was like 75.
I can't remember the year, but you're better at that than I am.
Well, yeah, I absolutely. I think it was. I could be wrong, but I just go by what I was promoting at the time.
Speaking of Little Billy John, if you get a chance, no hurry, no big deal, but if you could inside information sometime, it'd be cool.
Okay, I'm writing this down. And meanwhile, I'm looking up to see exactly how many people did Big Blue Diamond from 1950.
There's got
to
be a bunch. And you know, like I said, that little Johnny Taylor version of it was really good.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is interesting because I know there were tons of versions, and on secondhand songs, which they're not really great when it comes to some of the music we love, but they claim there's only 27 versions. I don't buy it. Everybody from Jerry Lee Lewis to Ernest Tubb. So, yeah.
Well, that kind of started out as one of those kind of Cajun-like songs.
Yeah, Red Perkins, right, like 1950, and then Tex Ritter and Jimmy Dean. But, yeah, Little Willie John didn't do it till 62, so it was a 12-year-old record at that point. But it was and then Little Johnny Taylor did it in 67 and Jackie Ward in 72. Mel Street and Jerry Lee Lewis also did it then. Boy, I don't know what caused that, but anyway.
Mel Street was pretty good, too.
Yeah,
pretty self-destructive himself.
True. Van Morrison did it in 2006. How about that? I can't imagine. I can't imagine.
I've never heard it. I've never heard it. I don't know.
All right.
Do you have a commercial break? I'm watching out for you.
Well, thank you for that. And Adam truly appreciates that. And plus, it'll give me another reason to play in more Willie John. Don't go away. Stay where you are on WGN Radio.
Yes, you're beautiful that no one can deny. from the tip of your toes to the love light in your eyes. I want some inside information.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That is Little Willie John. And those later sessions for him, I think that was around 63, one of the last things he did for King before he was out of there. And that was released as a single, was a B-side. So Lovely was the A-side. But, yeah, talking Little Willie John and talking to Johnny, we're going to find out about his Sunday night show and what's coming up this weekend. And plenty of calls from you, too, I hope, on WGN Radio.
I love you, darling. 100 years, and my falling tears tell it like it is. Take my hand, girl, and walk with me. Make my soul feel heavenly. I just can't help it, pretty baby. Ever since I laid eyes on you, baby, my falling tears tell it like it is.
Whoa, WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, another one that doesn't get too much airplay, to say the least, is Little Willie John and Tell It Like It Is. Obviously not the Aaron Neville record, but Titus Turner wrote that, along with Grits Inc. Groceries and everything else. So talking to Johnny and Austin, so about...
Little Willie John, he was one of a kind. He really was.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, very, very colorful start to finish, and left us with some great music and wonderful stories. So, Sunday night... Tell me about
it. Oh, okay. So Sunday night, I do a classic soul and R&B show on soulofthecity.net.
Yes.
That's the where you get there. Now, the only time that you hear this show is in real time, as in Sunday night between 6 and midnight. So if you go to that website and try to hear it now, you won't. It doesn't replay
right.
All the time. So Central Time, 6 to midnight, soulofthecity.net. And a lot of your listeners have emailed me and have come on over and listened, along with our good friends. You know who they are. They're in Austin, Texas as well.
Absolutely. Fran and Gary.
Gary and Fran.
Yeah.
We were out of sync on that
one.
Fran and Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've been really, 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 they've been... I guess they like the show because they hang in there every week.
So what's on tap for this coming week?
I tell you what I've been really working on are these Legends of Soul Radio, and that's the DJs.
Yeah, so who are we going to have?
Getting some clips of them. And it takes a little bit of work, but a lot of these I have, it's just a matter of finding them and getting the best parts out there and then rotating them so they'll be fresh, and you'll hear something different every week. Been working on some stuff from Jocko Henderson.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
He was really something.
You betcha, and very educated man. His father was, for a while, head of the Board of Education in Baltimore, and very much educated. And later in Jocko's life, he did rap and history records and things like that that were played in some inner-city schools. Really neat stuff.
I saw an interview with his son, who was a DJ for a while, I think after his dad passed.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Could have been before. His name was Doug, right?
Right. Well, so was Jocko, Doug Henderson. Same deal. And he grew up, like I say, in Baltimore. Both of his parents were teachers, and his dad, I think, ran the education. But he worked at WSID. And that was such a story, because that was a wonderful radio station in spite of its owners, and they were in this they were in this old warehouse, and in fact the air conditioning was a block of ice and a fan, and yeah, exactly. And one of the guys nipped his finger, and it bled, and I mean the owner just went. It was United Broadcasting, Richard and Pierre Eaton, the Eaton father and son deal. But the people who came out of WSID 1010 AM daytimer Baltimore were just unbelievable. And Jocko was one of them. In fact, he went from WSID to WHAT in Philly. Uh-huh. And that would have been like about 53. And this is before he got to New York. He was on WOV and Wado and all that. And but when he was on HAT and also on DAS, he was amazing. The Rocket Ship Show. And E. Papadoc, E. Tuliak, yeah, right. But the guy who taught him how to rap was Hot Rod Hulbert. I've mentioned that before, Maurice Holbert.
Are there any air checks of him out there?
I don't know. He was in Memphis before he was in Baltimore. So, but yeah, that was the guy, Hot Rod Holbert. And but Jocko learned well, to say the least. He had a TV show for a while too, which was pretty bizarre. It was black and white, and I can just see him in this silver spacesuit thing with planets. Oh God! But anyway, yeah. And so he was doing a lot of things. And so so you got some Jocko stuff for me.
Yeah, that's what I'm working on, and it takes a little bit of doing to get these things done and get the clips sorted out and a little bios of the stations they work for and so forth, and do it within like a minute and a half. But there's some great stuff out there, and that's been my primary focus, is to keep those updated so they don't wear out.
Oh, good.
Oh, that was one of Shelley Pope's little sayings, I believe. Who you wearing it out for tonight?
Yeah, right. Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, but I've got a little more Shelley Pope from Birmingham on WBUL.
Okay.
I worked with him for about two nights at KYOK in Houston. Did I tell you that?
No, I didn't. I did not realize that he was ever at KYOK.
Well, it was very short-lived.
Yeah.
Our program director, Rick Roberts, who came from WBOK in New Orleans, said, "Hey, I got somebody coming in. We're going to audition him. We're going to put him on. He could be really big here, man. He's going to be really big here." So I can't remember what shift I was doing at KYOK, but they brought Shelley Pope in a couple of nights to audition live, I guess because he was out of work. And when the general manager of KYOK heard him, he's like, no, not on this station. He's not.
Exactly.
Because, you know, not that he wasn't unique, and not that he didn't have his own thing to do, but by 1971, Houston, Texas had moved a bit.
It was passé everywhere, really, by then, and it's a shame too, because that's the soul radio I dearly loved. But no, it wasn't going to work anymore. So yeah.
But he was there a couple of times. He was a very nice guy. I just would come in after he got off and stuff, and then the last thing I knew, they put him on a bus and sent him back to New Orleans or wherever. But he was still on the air back in the 80s, I think.
I think so too. Yeah, probably a 990 in winter in New Orleans. But yeah, I still have a roll of bumper stickers, the Black Pope. Yeah, Shelley Pope.
Oh, do you really?
Yes. So if you want, when I unpack that box, I can send some to you. But
you're missing. Left one of my on the back of my car?
Yeah, if you want, I guess. They didn't age well. They've kind of turned a little sepia when they used to be white and black. Now they're kind of sepia and black, but yeah.
And probably printed on paper.
No, it's not. Well, it's something, but it's definitely not plastic. But I'm not sure it's paper either. I guess I'd have to look closer. I can't imagine what else it could be, but something else.
But so, that one air check where he goes on, I am a human radio station. And all you rooty poots out there, yeah, you put them all on the air with me at the same time. What do you say? I wait to head out. I wait to head out.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
All right, this will be fun. I will look forward to that.
Did you ever listen to my Sunday night show yet?
Yes, absolutely. I don't get to hear all that much of it because there's a lot going on here on Sunday nights, unfortunately. But I do hear it usually after I get in from dinner.
Good,
so, absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
I appreciate you listening.
Oh,
I think
it's great.
I appreciate your listeners do it too. Thank you so much.
You bet. You're so sound of the city dot soul of the city dot net. All right, soul of the
and
city.
And I came up
net.
With that. By the way, I came up with that name out of my own brain in 1989.
All right.
Just in case anybody wonders.
Oh well, there you go. Soul of the city dot net. All right, good deal. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Johnny.
Have a good one.
All right, you too. So, 888-876-5593. Doug Henderson, Jocko, actually ran for the House of Representatives. Yes, the U.S. House of Representatives in Pennsylvania. He didn't win, but it was a good campaign. And it's surprising how many people have made a go at politics. Now, some of them actually succeed. You know, obviously, Jerry Butler comes to mind. But, man, a lot of them who try, well, good commercials anyway. So, yeah, Jocko, or like when Gordon McClendon ran for Senate, join the move to McClendon. All right, well, not enough people joined. So, 888-876-5593. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. All right, so it was Jane in Milwaukee who wanted to hear some Mickey Finn. So let's talk about this a moment. Mickey Finn was actually a woman, Barbara Setti, and her husband Fred Setti was Fred E. Finn, and they opened a club in San Diego in 1960. It was an old warehouse that they converted, and made it kind of a gay 90s roaring 20s type nightclub. And he was a piano player from San Jose, and he had just received a business degree from San Jose State College, and he was considering, well, maybe we'll do Washington or Hawaii for the nightclub, but San Diego, it came down to logistics. He could afford to transport his collection of Nickelodeons to San Diego, but not clearly not to Hawaii or up to Seattle. So, and that was going to be the decoration for the new club. And so opens this club, 600 people. Like I say, it was a warehouse. So this was an instant hit. And it grossed like $250,000 in 1960. And then for 14 years, this was just huge. And there were things about 4 million customers consume 250,000 gallons of beer and all that kind of place. And one of the banjo players was Red Watson, but the other one was Barbara, his wife. And so Barbara, they named Mickey Finn, obviously. And it turned out that this was such a hit that they wind up being a summer replacement show in 1965. The interesting part about that was an NBC thing, and it was a summer replacement show for a show that nobody had ever heard of, Mona McCluskey. And the replacement actually got better ratings than Mona McCluskey. So, but apparently ABC had Peyton Place at the same time, so that was the end of that. Dunhill Records, Lou Adler was aware of them and put them on Dunhill, and you know they recorded some stuff, including what I played, Bonnie and Clyde. That was a single on Dunhill, and all that. So several things like that. Now after the television show, they wound up doing a headlining act at Caesar's Palace. And they were playing Las Vegas. Well, I should mention, when I say they, well, actually, there are two Mickey Finns. The first one, like I say, was Barbara, the blonde wife and all that. Well, they divorced in 1973. And, you know, amid still success, there were all sorts of promotions. Ultimately, that San Diego location closed in 1974. But Finn got remarried and somehow convinced his second wife, Kathy, to take over the banjo duties. And so it started up again, as far as that goes. But the real heyday would have been 1960 to basically through 73. And it was huge. And Finn, not Mickey, but Fred, the husband, was nothing if not the consummate promoter. He was always doing weird stunts, and he was racing a fire engine at the El Cajon Speedway, and he was firing cannons at the San Diego Chargers football team, and, you know, they opened a second Mickey Finn's right before they divorced, actually, in Beverly Hills on Restaurant Row there on La Cienega, and it did not last for that long. But anyway, that was the deal. And near as I know, after he got remarried and convinced Kathy to play banjo, they were doing it again from 1980 on. And they were doing it through the 90s. They were kind of a traveling thing, doing performances at dinner theaters. And they went back to San Diego and other Las Vegas clubs and, basic Florida deals and all that kind of stuff. In fact, that's where I think they relocated to Florida. And yeah, that was it. So, all right. Not sure why Jane in Milwaukee wanted to hear it, but she has. So, 888-876-5593. All right. We have David in Winthrop Harbor. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hello, Raleigh.
Yeah, what's up?
Would you be willing to play a little Doc Watson?
I don't know.
Tonight?
I don't know. I got to see if I have any. I say that because I don't know if I have any, but I'll look.
If you have any, yeah.
Anything in particular?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Okay. What would that be?
Is there a song called something of the... It goes like the miner's child who's sitting out in the storm, and there's so many Doc Watson. He did so much
yeah,
of everything. Let me think. Mining.
I'm trying to think. That Vanguard album from 64, but that was like Nashville Blues and Talk About Suffering,
yeah,
and all that.
That was, and then from the Newport Folk Festival, I think,
yeah,
there was someone that...
That I wouldn't have. But yeah, I'll see if I have anything at all. I might. Might actually have some later stuff. I'm not sure. Not my stuff, to say the least, but if I've got some, I'll be happy to play it for you. All right. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so not anything I'd pick out on my own, but that's quite all right. And so I'm pretty sure I have one of those Vanguard albums. He did two or three on Vanguard. Southbound was one of them, but the one before it was 64, I think. And then there was one like in 67. There were three. Anyway, 888-876-5593. We will, let's see here. Talk to James on the South Side. What's up, James?
How are you?
Well, all right. I've got one of your requests coming up next hour. That would be 100 pounds of clay.
Okay, thank you. Oh, and last night was like trying to. There was a movie. I've been trying to find the title. I'll probably find it, and I'll probably text it to you because I can't.
Well, you can't text. Now remember, you can't. I'm glad you brought that up. You cannot text. I do not have texting capability. This is a voice line only, and I know a lot of people do text. So I'm not saying it just for you. If you wonder why I don't text you back, it's because I don't have text capability. You got to call.
Okay.
I got email. You can email.
Oh yeah, that's what I meant. I'll email you the exact title.
Okay.
There was an Italian movie that actually where the guy had gotten this rare condition where he was basically like somnolent. He was pretty much almost like they thought he was dead.
Okay.
He couldn't tell anybody. He had no way of telling anybody that he was still. He was very much alive, and they had moved him to the morgue.
Oh, okay.
And it was a this was a morgue that was actually a medical school, basically.
Okay. All right.
So he's like, okay, and the drama is like, will he somehow be able to, or somebody who realizes he's got this condition, realizes that he's occasionally blinking his eyes, that realizes that he's very much alive?
Uh-huh.
I can't, because I was reminded of something you said last night.
Okay.
And so that was, I won't give away what happened, but it was kind of tragic.
Well, it's interesting, while we're talking, so I look up Italian movie Somnambulant. All right, so.
It's a giallo. Giallo.
What is it?
It's under the Italian giallo one, but this one isn't that blood.
We have The Postman, The Hand of God, and A Quiet Life. those are the three they bring up, but I don't know.
Okay, but because I'm certain I just can't find the reference book that I had that I'm pretty certain had the title of it, because it was an underrated one, because it really...
Well, another one here called Sleepless, 2001, a giallo film directed by Dario Argento, centering around the investigation of a series of murders.
No, it's not that one.
Okay, there's another one, Sweet Dreams, and I don't know what that's about. There's another one called 8 and a Half, that's Federico Fellini. So it's not that. So I don't know. You know, I mean, I can't count on one hand the amount of movies I've seen. So I don't know. But if you if you come up with it, I'll look for it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
But let's see. I shouldn't put another request on there.
No, because you're going to hear
shrink down a little
right,
bit,
and you're going to hear 100 Pound of Clay next.
Okay. All
right.
Okay. You
good
take
deal.
Care.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Right.
Yeah. I'm always happy to play Gene McDaniels. And so that's the deal. And we have another hour to talk together, so if it's on your mind, I'll make sure that it's on mine. And, you know, otherwise I'll just find something to prattle on, as usual. Yeah, right, exactly. So we'll do the best we can. And maybe find some Doc Watson. Coming up on WGN Radio.
He took 100 pounds of clay, and then he said, "Hey, listen, I'm gonna fix this world today, because I know what's missing." Then he rolled his big sleeves up, and a brand new world began. He created a woman and a life.
yes he did. With just 100 pounds of clay, he made my life worth living, and I will thank
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and there it is for James. 100 Pounds of Clay, 1961 on Liberty. Gene McDaniels, and that's another exemplar in why you shouldn't play anything from CDs. Yeah, I must have pulled some of these Gene McDaniels from there. Every time I hear them, I'm like, damn. Yeah, you're desecrating Snuff Garrett's memory. Still good songs, but just not as good. All right, one of these days I'll get the 45s out and redo that. Robert and Stickney, welcome to WGN Radio.
Yeah, Raleigh. Boy, I've got my windows open. I'm enjoying this beautiful breeze tonight in Chicago.
Nice.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I've got a couple of requests, but first, I remember last week you had a conversation about the way life was in the 50s and 60s, the differences, and I remembered a couple of things. One thing was, remember when we had zones instead of zip codes?
Oh, sure, and I remember very well in the mid-60s when they came up with zip codes. And remember all those commercials for Speedy? The zip was the zone improvement plan.
Right, yeah. And then, let's see, another thing... when my folks still had an apartment yet before they bought their house, they had a two-party phone line.
Oh, you can have more than that, actually. You can have up to four.
Yeah.
Sure, party lines, the distinctive ring, depending on whether it was for you or one of the one of the other people on your party line. Of course, that was common.
Yeah. I mean, such a difference. I was still a little tight, but I remember that. Yeah.
Well, oh yeah. No, I didn't know many people who had them, but I did have one friend who had them, and it drove me crazy. You know, you could only talk. Somebody would pick. I need to use the line now. You know, that kind of stuff. Okay.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. And as far as a request, there was a song that Herb Kent, the Cool Gent, used to play quite often called Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Oh, of course. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, and you probably, last week I was falling asleep early in the evening. Now, you probably played my one I had from a little while back called Just Out of Reach of My Two Empty Arms. I'm not sure if you played that one.
I think I did, but I'm going to write it down again in case.
Okay. I don't remember who did it, but yeah.
Yeah, all right. A few people. But yes, absolutely. We will definitely do that. And yes, Smokey Joe's Cafe, Robbins. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All okay,
right.
Then, Raleigh.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Bye-bye.
So, 888-876-5593. Yeah, I've written down all the requests, and I am getting to them one at a time, but there are a lot of them. So, if you don't hear them quickly, well, you will eventually. So, yeah, James has more than a dozen. All right, but that's all right. Whatever it is, we'll hit it sooner or later as far as that goes. So what else? 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. And maybe more news of the weird coming up. Yeah, I don't know why not. All that or your calls. 8888-R-O-L-L-Y-E on WGN Radio. We'll be right back. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Herb Alpert, Route 101, 1982 on A&M, and I forget who requested it, but it's on the list, and I do remember that call, yeah. All right. I think he asked for Highway 101. It's Route 101, but there you have it, 1982. Happy to play it. 888-876-5593. All right. Here's an interesting lawsuit. The guy won, by the way. We'll cut to the chase there. But I got to tell you, I'm not sure how. Oh, I can understand what Google did to him, but then again, you're not supposed to be naked on the street. All right, so here is our story. Unnamed man, as far as that goes, Argentina, a town about, I don't know, 150 miles from Buenos Aires. And so here comes Street View, the car passing right through his town. And what they catch him on his property, completely nude. And apparently the photos taken by the Google car caught him from behind, showing his derriere in all its glory. And even though his face wasn't visible, the very clear street address captures exactly who he is and where he lives, and it made him the laughingstock of the town. So he was sick of this. He said, I'm taking him to court. And he took him to court in 2017, and it took a couple of years, but this guy won. Now, near as I can tell, it's not legal to be nude on public streets. Yeah, even on your own property, you know, in view of the general public. So I don't know. Maybe the laws are different than Argentina, possibly. But I would think that, there was a little jeopardy on both sides of this. But nonetheless, apparently Google had to pay up. All right, so there you have it. So, and of course, by filing the lawsuit, even people who didn't know him before basically knew him then. Again, they didn't mention his name. They just showed the pictures that had his address. All right, so what do we have? We also have the sewers of the Ukraine, of Kyiv. All right, and apparently, you know, we always hear about what's going on in sewers, and you hear about, you know, alligators in New York and all this and all that stuff. Well, apparently, in the Kyiv, Ukraine sewers, there exists a sizable portion of tropical fish native to Venezuela and Guyana. And they've been thriving as far as that goes. I mean, the ability of guppies to adapt to anything is well documented, but this is a full-blown colony of popular aquarium fish living in the sewer system in Kyiv. And apparently, the interesting thing, of course, South America, how do they get there? And what is interesting, scientists, is that they're not only surviving, they are absolutely thriving. All right, so it was that they first noticed this as far back as the 1980s. And they apparently not only are there, but are able to breed there. And doing very well, I might add. So I guess it's just a plus. That's right. Yeah. When you flush the toilet, you just never know what's going to pop up. All right. So Carl is in Riverside. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Oh, sorry about that, Riley. I got caught short, but I'm back now. All hey, right. Thanks for playing. I just happened to tune in, and boom, Route 101.
Oh, good, good.
Thank you.
My pleasure. I couldn't remember. Now that you say it, I remember it was you who requested it, but it's like, God, I wrote it down and forgot to write down who wanted it. There you have it.
This has happened a couple times where, you know, maybe I zonk out or conk out or come in late, and I turn you on, and so to speak, and there you are. And that's, how cool is that, you know? So, you know what? It's a really good driving song.
It's a wonderful song, opinion. Yeah. I thought it was a terrific record, and it came out in 82, long after stations had to play instrumentals going to news. So the fact that it got any airplay at all was amazing, but it did.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. And I also like Chuck Mangione's Give It All You Got.
Yeah,
I like
all
that
right,
one
all right.
A lot.
Is that, you know, a lot of people said I got to play Chuck Mangione, and I haven't yet, but I will.
That's okay. You don't have to play it.
No. I'm more willing to. I'm not willing to play Feel So Good because I had to play it so much when it was a hit. That's just
you
like,
told me last,
yeah,
last
right.
week. Yeah.
So
like
give it
over
all,
and over and
yeah,
over.
Yeah. So that's not going to happen. But Give It All You Got. I'll do that.
Hey, if you wish, here's what I really called about. Though I noticed you spoke with a gentleman regarding the Oldsmobile Tornado.
Dennis, right.
Okay, what do you think of this one? I actually had one of these. I don't anymore. Do you remember the Buick Riata?
Oh, I do remember the Riata, and I thought that was the coolest looking car. I love the Riata, but people told me that it was not something they wanted to drive and not terribly reliable. So what was your experience?
I concur with both of those things, okay. Actually.
But it was beautiful.
So funky. It was really nice looking, and I believe it was almost kind of like, as opposed to automation on the production line, I think it was kind of handmade, so to speak.
Yeah.
With guys.
And it was a two-seater, for people who don't remember. It was around from like 88 to 91 or something, not a whole long time. They had a convertible at one point. And, I thought it was a great car. Now, if it was hand-assembled, that would make it probably a loss for Buick because they didn't sell for all that much. Now, the one thing that I objected to was it had a V6. And I'm a V8 girl. I want my big Hagen engines, you know. And I think because if it was hand produced, it would explain it. They sold it for more than people expected it to be sold, but still, considering what it was, not a terrible price. But now,
what do you think? Maybe what, 4 or 5 years at the most?
It was 3 years. It was a 3 year run.
3 years. There you go. Yeah. I had a 90.
Yeah, okay. Well, it was 88 to 91. So maybe 4 years.
I had a white one with a kind of a cordovan or wine-colored interior.
Okay.
That's what I had.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there were occasionally some interesting cars. Oldsmobile made an interesting car for a minute there, too, after the Tornados, and it was in the 80s also. I don't remember what it is offhand, but another thing where it was like there for about a minute and pretty to look at but not great to drive.
Yep. Hey, Raleigh, final question before you go to news. I think I heard, is the gentleman that calls in fairly regularly, he's got mucho problems, is his name Jim?
Yes.
I think he was on with John Williams last week, Friday, when John does the little segment called The Bright Side of Life. And I thought, that sounds like Jim. I think
all
it
right.
was him.
Probably was. Probably was.
Go.
How about that? Yeah, not surprising. So, yeah, now I got to figure out what Oldsmobile this was. Because I know saying there's a pretty Oldsmobile. Well, there was one, and it didn't run that well, but it was pretty Oldsmobile. All right, I'll look for
it. I want my Riata back.
Yes,
that's
absolutely. I'm with you. And you know, while they're at it, let them improve the performance and the reliability.
Yeah, that 6 was a little funky.
Yeah.
You know, but,
yeah.
Great
yeah.
design, though. Great
yeah,
design.
Yeah.
Hey,
pretty.
Young lady. I will let you go. Thank you very much.
All right.
For
thanks for
call.
Calling. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So 888-876-5593. But yeah, that Riata was a cute little car. Liked that. But what was that? There was, for a minute there, I liked this. Yeah, right. And then it went away, and everybody told me, for the most part, forget about it, because it's just not a great running car. So now, of course, as I'm speaking, good old internet, don't you know? And I don't see it on the list. Maybe I've made this up.
I think it was a Pontiac two-seater.
No, not the Pontiac two-seater. I remember that one, too. But, yeah, and what was that? I can't think of it either. But
it was made in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah.
Fiero or something like that?
No, that was, I didn't like that car, the Fiero, as far as that goes. If you're talking about it being a Fiero, I didn't like the Fiero. But there was something else that, you know, oh, well. Yeah. I do remember the Fiero very well. I never thought that was really too good looking, but I don't know. Well, it'll eventually come to me, and probably it won't be an Oldsmobile or whatever. I love the concept cars. You know, you used to see them at the auto show, and the Oldsmobile Golden Rocket or what have you. And you know, when I was younger, I thought that those cars were really going to come out. it was a while before I realized, no, I don't know why they do it, but they've only made two, and they're touring the auto shows this year, and that's it. But some of them, you know, would have been great had they, I remember also we'll have one, the Aerotech. Oh, geez, that was weird looking. And, there were a ton of them, but they were always a hit of the auto shows, and then the cars never actually happened. So, I guess the idea of the concept vehicle was not to turn them into sales, but that Tornado actually, I think, was a concept car before, and that was a wonderful car. Truly. All right, so 888-876-5593. We'll have plenty of news of the weird. Where was I on that? Oh, I had a story from Great Britain that just, man, you just hear some of these stories and you say this is not even possible about this guy. But Neil Hopper, 49 years old, vascular surgeon, all right? He decides he's going to defraud a couple insurance companies. Now, if you're a doctor and you want to defraud an insurance company, we could probably sit here and come up with a few dozen ways that you might want to do it. You would never come up with what this guy did. Apparently, he amputated both of his legs in order to make false representations to two insurers. He was hoping to gain $320,000 from one company and $314,000 from the other. Now, before his problems, he was shortlisted in the European Space Agency's search for an astronaut with a disability. Since he had no legs, he qualified. He, in the meantime, got caught. So can you imagine that? Removing both of your legs and then you don't make the money scamming the insurance company? Yeah, just absolutely out there as far as that goes. Then we have the South Florida Water Management District. Working with the University of Florida. Let me pause right there and mention things like kudzu. All right, what could possibly go wrong? Developing a new strategy for managing invasive pythons in the Everglades. All right, so apparently they've come up with something, and it's nowhere near as bad as python. Solar-powered toy bunnies that emit heat and are equipped with cameras alerting staff to python activity, which sends the staff out to euthanize the snakes. The district said they're committed to protecting the delicate ecosystem. Something tells me there's going to be a few cases where the snakes win. All right, so with that in mind, we'll come up with even weirder story. I don't think we can beat the guy in Great Britain, but we'll try to come up with some weirder stories coming up on WGN Radio.
Oh, I Smokey Joe's Cafe. Oh, I Smokey Joe's Cafe.
One day while I was eating beans
at Smokey Joe's Cafe,
just sitting digging all the scene
at Smokey Joe's Cafe,
a chick came walking through the door that I had never seen before. At least I never saw her bow
at Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Ooh, and I started shaking when she sat right down next to me. Ooh, her knees were almost touching mine
at Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Her chill was running down my spine
at Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Oh, I could smell a sweet perfume. She smiled at me, my heart went boom. Then everybody in the room
at Smokey Joe's Cafe,
they said, man, be careful, that chick belongs to Smokey Joe. From behind the counter, I saw a man, a shelf hat on his head and a knife in his hand. He grabbed me by my collar and began to shout,
"You better eat up all your beans and bar and clear out on that."
Yes, I know I'll never eat again
at Smokey Joe's Cafe,
and so we'll never meet again
at Smokey Joe's Cafe.
I'd rather eat my chili beans at Jim's or Jack's or John's or Jeans
then take my chances eating.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. There are the Robins. Yes, some of which later joined the Coasters and some of which didn't. So that was the deal there. But Smokey Joe's Cafe and that, of course, early Lieber and Stoller. And I don't remember who requested it, but it was moments ago. So maybe you recall. I'm sorry about that. 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. I'm not sure, but I was looking at it. It might have been, although I kind of doubt it, but that Oldsmobile Trofeo, which was kind of a souped up Tornado. I like the way that looked with the hidden headlights and all that, but it only came with a V6. And so that was a deal killer right there for me. All right, David and Winthrop, welcome to WGN Radio. So, David.
Howie?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, there you are.
Yes. So I have a question for you.
Yes.
What was your first car you owned?
Oh, hell. The first car that I actually owned was probably that first Corvette. I don't know. Oh, no. There was an Impala, an early Impala.
Big. Very big.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, it was all right. And then later I
so
got.
So what year
I,
are we?
One of those years. We don't really need to embarrass me with that.
Oh,
but
okay.
the fact that I say Impala, at least they were making them, because the year before they only had Bel Airs and Biscaynes. But anyway, I digress.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, I just want to preface what you just said. My mother, who I talk about fondly, is now in a... She's old. Anyway.
Okay.
Did
that's
you ever,
fond.
No, you don't see movies.
No.
Okay, let's talk.
Mm.
Her dying... Not a dying wish, I'd just say, but... Her first car was like a Hudson Hornet.
Oh, okay.
And they don't exist. But like in the Cars movie, which is a good movie, too,
by the way.
Because I love the Southwest.
Well, the Hornet, we are talking the 50s. I mean, it's not a 40s car. That was early 50s.
I know it's a 50s, but if you go to, like, they're very hard to find. Like, if you go to, like, they don't exist anymore.
Well, it was originally Hudson Motor, and then it was American Motors. And so, right.
And they disappeared. So if you go to, like, a car, like an antique car show, right?
Yeah.
They're pretty rare.
Well, sure they are. And that's why people like them. And, of course, American Motors was the combination of Hudson and Nash Kelvinator. So you see some of those horrible old Nashes. And I mean, some people think those are cool now, too. They certainly weren't when they were out. But those Hudson's, the Hornets, right. The floor pan was, like, dropped, lower center of gravity. It was very weird.
And you mentioned the Ford Torino.
Yeah. What about I remember the Torino, yes.
Okay, so I'm thinking Bill Elliott 76. That was his first car he drove.
Oh, yeah? Well, I thought
I'm
the
David, I'm,
wasn't
a,
wasn't
I'm the race fan. I'm
okay, the, yeah, the wasn't the fan. Torino, yeah. Wasn't the Torino kind of a premium version of the Fairlane?
Yeah.
And then it became a standalone after that.
Yeah.
And yeah, Torinos were known for, you know, NASCAR and all that. But yeah, there were an outgrowth of that Fairlane, and then they spun them off into their own car.
Oh. And how about, do you remember the Winged Bird?
The Winged Bird?
Dodge,
oh,
the
God.
Dodges?
Oh, God.
Crazy.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So anyway, I was talking to John, and I said, you know, because I'm a little younger than you, I would say if I could have like a mint car right now, and you wouldn't see this, anywhere, is like a because you were mentioning Buicks, a Buick, okay, 1983.
All right.
Grand National.
Really?
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Well,
and I told John, you could take that thing and almost race it, but not really.
Yeah, they looked a little like Chevy Monte Carlos.
I liked them because they were the fastest car for the and Buick put out some. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that makes it
died, and that's a really collector's item.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That yeah, and they're still for sale. You know, I see them listed fairly regularly.
You ever watch that when they do the like the auctions?
No, that's actually near where my studio is in Scottsdale, but no, I don't go and I don't watch.
Here, like in Wisconsin,
yeah.
Honey.
Right.
Those things would be rolling out 60, 70 grand, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
and
I mean, absolutely.
I was looking at them in high school. I'm like, oh, I want that.
Yeah, no, the price tags on some of these cars are just amazing, but, you know.
So, I'll enlighten you. My first car I ever owned, title, you know, paid for, was a 79 Buick LeSabre.
Okay.
My dad says, David, I'm going to put you in a boat because
That was a fine land yacht. I remember that car. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and a heavy, like a tank.
Yeah.
And then, so we just had the Lake County Fair, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. In Illinois here.
Uh-huh.
So, do you ever get into demolition derbies?
Oh, I used to love them, and I've told this story many times. When I worked in Miami with Bill Taylor, the guy who owned the radio stations here where I am before me, we actually entered the news guy's car in a demolition derby. And yeah.
It's fun. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. It was this old beater Cadillac, and we had all as a staff kind of gotten together and decided we were going to, you know, buy him another car, obviously. But yeah, we entered his Cadillac, an old beater Cadillac, in a demolition derby. So yeah, mm-hmm. Evan Carl was his name.
Okay. That's what I'm... So, what, you go to the demolition derbies nowadays?
Yeah.
They're like EV vehicles. They're like compact.
No.
There's no big steel out there anymore.
No. That's not fun. Oh,
well,
no.
It's different, but they collapse real quick.
Well, I would think, no, you want to have tanks out there pretty much.
The tanks are all rusted out. There's
tanks. Yeah, that's true. Right. Right. Because if they're in great condition, nobody's going to put them in a demolition derby.
No, they're going to put them in a...
Of course.
An auction or...
Right, something, yeah, not a demolition derby. But yes, I used to love demolition derbies.
Yeah. However, I will say, I saw, it looked like about a 1980 Buick on the road the other day. You know, you see some of these creep out of the garages down there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, okay. No rust, you know. How's that thing still running? Where do you find parts? You know,
well,
old lady that had that thing for 50 years.
But, you know, that's actually easier in some ways. Yes, some of the parts, especially like air conditioning components, oh, my God, the things that they took off the market become a problem. But other than that, if you got a 50-year-old car, assuming you know what you're doing, you can work on that.
I can't do it now.
That's right.
No,
today's cars, you just cannot.
I won't even...
Well, you couldn't if you wanted to, because nobody has that kind of diagnostic equipment. So, yeah, 50 years, I'd try to find the parts. But like I say, the real Achilles heel is the air conditioning, because you just can't get how those cars had been engineered air conditioning-wise, because that's not available anymore.
And now everything's it's like a space shuttle.
Well, of course.
Okay. So... Not so much now, but then you've got to go through emissions testing. And
of course, and God forbid you wind up with a California car. Don't even start me. So
I will never live in California. Well, they got too many rules in California.
Yeah, but whether you live there or not, if you're buying used cars, it's important to check that VIN number and make sure it wasn't manufactured for California.
Well, thank God I don't live in California.
You don't have to live there. It can easily be somebody who was there at some point. Check the VIN. Check the VIN numbers. Yeah, that's my advice to absolutely anybody listening who's ever thinking about a used car. Check those VIN numbers and make sure this car was not manufactured for California. Yeah.
Well, mine came from Louisiana.
Yeah, all right. And if it was, any of the other 49 states is just fine. Just not manufactured for California. Yeah.
I don't trust California.
No, well, you shouldn't.
It's not meant for anything, really.
Well, probably, but I mean, that's restrictive. Yeah, that's the thing that people don't understand. Those cars can wind up in any state. So do your homework, check those VINs.
And that's a deal like in Mexico. Well, this is all with. Anyway.
The best Mexico car story, without a doubt, to this day. The best, the absolute best. And I don't know how this was even possible, but Chevrolet introduced the Nova. Well, in Spanish, Nova means no go. You would think they would have changed the name.
It never.
Nope. Yep. So, what can I tell you?
It was like poison.
Yeah, Nova.
Nova was a big seller.
Well,
that was
unfortunately, it was.
That was like the Ford. So anyway.
Yeah.
What's your favorite car? If you could have any car of your dreams.
You mean current cars?
Yeah.
None of them. No.
Do you drive?
Yeah, I drive. I can drive, and there are places I can drive. I can't get on like an interstate or something like that anymore, vision-wise. But I can, you know, drive around town. Yeah.
Would you want something like you don't like it? Why don't you? Okay.
No, I still have my Chevrolet paid me back for many years of horrible Corvettes where I got to see America because I was stranded by the side of the road for days. And, you don't know what life is like until you spend a week in Monahans, Texas, and all you have is the phone book to read, and you find that the only section that's more than two pages is for drill bits. So, yeah, I know that. But anyway, finally, Chevy paid me back with the greatest car ever. I have a 1995 Z28, and I bought it because it had the Camaro engine in it, and it was only $1,000 for that upgrade. So I thought, hell, I'll take this. So I still have that car. $250,000 miles, runs like a top. I'm never getting rid of this car. So that's what I drive.
And you keep up with all the maintenance?
Of course I do.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, no, so it runs, the only way that I'm getting rid of this is if I inadvertently total it, but, you know, in my lifetime, I've never had an accident in forward. Don't ask me about the 16 in reverse. All right, so, anyway.
Right quick, one sec.
Yeah.
So, I kind of turned Japanese. I'm not promoting Japanese right now, but I went to pretty much Japanese cars in maybe 1989, and American cars are a lot better. So the problem I had with American cars back in the 70s. They rust out. The engines would.
No, I believe me. I know.
I had. Literally, I could look at. I'd be driving. I go, Ma, look at that. I can see the road.
Yeah.
This would be good.
Yeah. No,
and they rust out. They rust out now. And the other thing I didn't like about, and GM had a problem with this, was their paint. In the 80s, it would start peeling. And I don't know, that's just...
Yeah, we could go on and on about that. Yeah, the reality is that, unfortunately, we made...
The reality is you have a great car and you're happy with it.
Yeah, no, I am happy with it. But we paved the road for the Japanese imports to come in with the unreliability and everything else. And,
with Datsun and Nissan.
We've done all that. So anyway, that's it from here, David, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Peace, Raleigh.
Okay, thanks. All right.
Take
so
care.
888-876-5593. Yeah, the Nova thing. And that was disputed, by the way, because, of course, Nova, there's a space between the two. And Chevy said, no, they sold just fine in Venezuela and, and in Mexico. But no, for many people, that just didn't work. All right. So 888-876-5593 if you want the last word. Otherwise, I'll find something else weird to talk about on WGN Radio.
Clapping and your fingers start to popping and your feet start to moving around. And if you start to swing and sway when a band starts to play a real cool and way out sound. And if you get the can't help it and you can't sit down, you feel like you gotta move around.
Need a shot of rhythm and blues
with just a little rock and roll on the side, just for good measure.
Need a pair of dancing shoes.
A lot of pleasure, don't you worry about a thing. If you start to dance and sing, and chill bumps come up on you. And when that rhythm finally hits you, and the beat gets you too, well, here's the thing for you to do. A lot of pleasure, don't you worry about a thing. If you start to dance and sing, and chill bumps come up on you. And when that rhythm finally hits you, and the beat gets you too, well, here's the thing for you to do.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, a shot of rhythm and blues. And I have down here, play Anything You Want by Arthur Alexander. And once again, I didn't write who wanted me to do that. I remember it was a female. But I can play anything by Arthur Alexander. I love them all. But I think A Shot of Rhythm and Blues is one of my faves. Terry Thompson wrote it. And he was one of the original studio guys at Fame, Florence, Alabama Music Enterprises, don't you know? Rick Hall, who owned Fame at the time, he produced that. The A-side was You Better Move On, which Arthur Alexander wrote and was a quasi-hit here. But the B-side, Shot of Rhythm and Blues, basically nobody played. It was a short record. It was like a minute and 40 seconds or something, not long enough to do anything. But it was just a great song. And when the British invasion started and you started to see all these groups that, you know, you've never heard of and for good reason, the Liverpool Five or what have you, or maybe there were four, I don't remember right now, but whoever they were, what was there, they bring out A Shot of Rhythm and Blues, and more unknown British invasion acts did A Shot of Rhythm and Blues than I can count. So it absolutely makes you wonder, but it was a fine song, and Arthur Alexander did it originally as a B-side, and I was happy to play it. So whoever it was, I hope you're listening, and I hope you enjoyed Arthur. All right, so 888-876-5593. I got about a minute and a half, and it belongs to Naoto in Japan. All right, Naoto.
Yeah, do you know the famous parking area called Daikoku Parking in Yokohama?
No, what is it?
Yeah, it's kind of like a famous for like car enthusiasts. Like people gather and look at each other's cars and.
Yeah.
So
wow.
Maybe like, I don't know, you are the type of person who attends these kind of events, but like, have you ever been to like a meeting or a similar kind of event?
Huh. No, I don't know about this at all.
Oh, really?
No, interesting. You'll have to tell me more about this.
Cool.
But it'll have to be tomorrow night because right now we're out of time.
Yeah, okay.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
All
right. So, there you go. Yeah, 21 hours from now we do this all again, and maybe you'll call, and I certainly would appreciate that. So, I had a few things on the way out I was going to talk to you about, and maybe we'll get into this guy tomorrow night, but he's my favorite criminal to date, as far as this year anyway, the 2025 criminal of choice. He was arrested in India for impersonating an ambassador of made-up nations. And he had several. All right, what he would do, would he was rent space for a fake embassy, and he would impersonate himself as an ambassador. And the country was like West Arctica or Siborga, you know, one of the stands, I don't know. And meanwhile, he'd bilk people, you know, defrauded dozens of Indians, apparently, because he was setting up lucrative business deals, and they were giving him money. Now, would you give someone money for a foreign country and you didn't even bother to check to see if it existed? Yeah, sometimes you think that, you know, a fool and his money are soon parted. Maybe it's for the best. I don't know. So on that note, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. 21 hours from now, we'll do it again. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.